Lead poisoning has been a long-standing problem for wildlife in Nova Scotia. Lead poisoning most frequently happens when birds ingest lead shot, but can happen with many other kinds of metal too. Hope for Wildlife is a nonprofit organization in Nova Scotia that works to rehabilitate wildlife in the province. They have rescued almost 250 different species and have released over 90,000 animals after treating them. Michaela Junk is a veterinarian at Hope for Wildlife. She is seeing lead poisoning cases more commonly and they're increasing. Hope for Wildlife documented 4 cases of lead poisoning in 2024, an increase of only 2 over 2023. So just in the last little while, I've seen like a few posts about lead poisoning at Hope for Wildlife. I'm just curious, like, how common have these cases been in the last few months?
Yeah, we definitely see them, I mean, more than we would like, several cases every year, and a wide variety of species too, mostly birds, but we do see it in mammals as well.
And so on the Hope for Wildlife Facebook page on January 3rd, there was a duck that had ingested what looks like a small chain link kind of situation. What kinds of things might animals kind of mistake for food that do actually contain lead?
Yeah, so we commonly see it in raptors, so like bald eagles, for example, when they are scavenging on carcasses that have been shot with lead ammunition. That's how often they ingest it. Or other birds like loons, for example, they sometimes will accidentally ingest it if there's some lead tackle attached to something that they're trying to eat, or if there was lead tackle that was at the, like, under the water when they're trying to dive down and look after or look for grit.
And so a bird like a duck that ate this little chain link kind of contraption, what kind of things do ducks eat that might have been mistaken for something like that?
Yeah, so she's kind of more of a grazer, so this was probably not quite sure exactly how she ended up ingesting it. Probably was accidental. So whether it was just kind of left around and she, like, in the grass or something like that, and she was kind of just chowing down and accidentally ingested it that way. It was kind of like a bunch of little individual pieces of metal. So she might have kind of just been picking them up individually as she went along.
Right. And so I wanted to kind of look into the kind of physiological process. So what happens kind of like physiologically when lead is ingested by an animal?
Yes, we usually see the toxicity when the lead is in their gastrointestinal system, rather than if they had been shot, for example. When it's in their stomach, they're starting to break it down, and then they absorb that in their system. And then they will often store it in their bones, in their soft tissue, they can store that for quite some time. Long-lasting effects of lead, it can last quite a while.
So it's the kind of thing that they eat it, and then it kind of spreads to other parts of the body?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so they eat it, they break it down, or they start absorbing the lead, and then, yeah, it spreads. It affects their nervous system. So often they'll come in very lethargic or head hanging low if they have lead toxicity. Sometimes it can affect other organ systems too, like their liver or their kidneys.
Right. And so you had mentioned the kind of lethargic symptoms. What other kind of symptoms are there, and how do they typically present themselves?
So usually it actually varies quite a bit between species. A bald eagle, for example, seem to be very sensitive to lead, whereas other birds like waterfowl, or I've seen turkey vultures as well, that have really high lead levels and they're not really showing much clinical signs. But usually if they are, they're kind of quiet, head hanging low. They're often dehydrated because they haven't been feeling well. They haven't been eating properly, taking care of themselves. They can sometimes be quite thin. And sometimes they can be anemic just from the lead being in their system and them feeling sick.
And so for animals that have like a higher lead content in their body, is that just like a result from them eating little bits and pieces here and there, and they're kind of acclimatized to it?
Yeah, so I'm suspecting that like certain species seems to be able to tolerate lead level, like higher lead levels, whereas other species seem to not be able to. I'm not sure if that's just an adaptation of them. I know like turkey vultures, like we are fortunate enough here, we can do in-house lead testing. So I've seen bald eagles with a lead level around 15 or 20 that are like present really, really sick. Then I had a turkey vulture who his lead levels was too high to read. So it was over 65, which is a lot higher. And he seemed almost perfectly fine. He was up and bright and walking around and eating. So not quite. Turkey vultures are definitely more scavenge birds. So that might be a theory too.
And how does Hope for Wildlife go about treating lead poisoning when you get a case that comes in?
Yeah, so we check their lead levels if we're suspicious of it, and then we start them on chelation therapy, basically to try to bind up that lead that's in their system that's circulating, and then so that they can excrete it, usually through their kidneys. So there's a couple of different medications we can use, and then also just making sure that they're staying well hydrated, so fluid therapy, and getting the proper nutrition into them and any other supportive care that they might need. Depending on how severe the cases are, sometimes they need a couple rounds of chelation, and so we check their lead levels periodically as they go.
Can you tell me a little bit more about how the chelation therapy actually works?
Yeah, so there's kind of some different medications. Basically, there's different IV medications and some oral ones. And essentially, the drugs kind of bind up that lead that's circulating in their system, and then they are able to excrete it through their kidneys. So rather, because they will often store that lead in their bones or their soft tissue. So rather than it staying there, it kind of mobilizes, attaches to these drugs that are circulating through their system, and they can excrete it through their kidneys and eliminate it that way. Because it can be stored in their bones, though, that's why we sometimes have to do repeat rounds of chelation. So we want to keep measuring that lead levels until we're happy with how they stay low.
Right. And from the cases that you've seen at Hope for Wildlife of the lead poisoning, how high would you say the recovery rate has been?
If we can catch it early on, usually pretty good. We have had unfortunately, some patients pass away from lead toxicity. So if we can just really keep them hydrated, as long as it's not too severe, and get proper nutrition into them, get them started on the medication, and also get that lead out of them. So for this duck, for example, like if we do see evidence of potentially metal in their gastrointestinal system, we want to get that out of them, whether it's by like pumping their stomach or just helping things pass through out the other end.
Right. And so how can people kind of be more preventative in the wild and making sure that there's not as much lead for animals to potentially consume?
Yes, there's a lot of people are trying to steer away from like lead ammunition or lead tackle for like fishermen and things like that, so that's not going out into the environment. But also too, just people being very aware of what they're leaving behind in the environment, not just lead and lead products in general, but other garbage, just cleaning up after yourself, making sure that you're not leaving things behind that wildlife can get into.
Right. And do you think there's a topic of this conversation that we haven't touched on that would be important for people to understand?
I don't think so. I think that kind of covers everything, lead toxicity in a nutshell.
Right. Well, again, thank you very much for talking to me, Michaela. It was really nice to speak with you.
Yeah, of course.
That was Michaela Jonk, who is a veterinarian with Hope for Wildlife. Reporting for the Local Journalism Initiative and CKDU, I'm Sarah Drysdale.